RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 220 with guest Stephen Fosquette, recorded Friday, July 8th, 2011. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. I got Greg Hughes with me.
Hey, Richard. How's it going today?
I'm good. I am not doing massive deployments across the world like some friends of mine.
Who?
You. Aren't you doing that big data protection project right now?
Yeah. I have a big project that I'm working on.
Oh, there you go. You know?
Actually, several big projects, but there's always several big projects, but some of them are bigger than others.
So, we ought to do a show around one of them one of these days, because it's always interesting stuff, that much I know.
Yeah, well, one of the fortunate or unfortunate, depending on your point of view, things about the work that I do is I can't talk about it on the show.
Right.
But, and there's good reasons for that. But some of the topics are pretty interesting, and, you know, sometime in the future, they may be topics that we'll talk about. Who knows?
You security guys, you're no fun at all.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not allowed to be fun. Aren't we the guys that are supposed to be like the curmudgeons and always tell people no?
Yes, that's right. Just hang us, you hang the sign on your door of your office that says no, any questions? Because you want to set up the relationship the right way.
Now, you know that really isn't the way that I operate.
So. I know.
You know what? That would be a good show someday, actually. You know, I mean, I have a philosophy that's, you know, that you know, even though our job is quite often is to protect the company from itself,
yeah.
Sometimes as well as outsiders, but our job is really never to say no. It's always to find a way to say yes. That might, I don't know. I wonder if that can make a show someday.
I think it's kind of interesting. A great topic around security, because we generally have. Yeah. I mean, I find too many security conversations are alarmist or incredibly negative. So a positive security conversation, I think, is a great idea. We'll do that in the future.
Yeah. So, you know, and it applies to IT as well, right?
I totally agree.
IT organizations that are not very well liked because they're the no people.
Yeah.
You know? And we're really, our job is to serve a customer base and to help people do their jobs well. So.
And speaking of serving a customer base, you know, our listeners, you can send us an email, info@runasradio.com, and let us know if that's a show you want, a positive security show. I don't even know if it's possible, but it's worth a try. So,
hey, come on. It's very possible. And if you send email to info@runasradio.com, Richard and I both get that, and we read them. We read every single one.
You bet.
And we always like to hear from you.
Yeah, definitely. But today's conversation is storage server. I've got Stephen Fosquette on the line. He's an active participant in the world of enterprise information technology, currently focused on enterprise storage and cloud computing. He's responsible for Gestalt IT, a community of independent IT thought leaders, and organizes the popular Tech Field Day events. A longtime voice in the storage industry, Stephen has authored numerous articles for industry publications and is a popular presenter at industry events. His contributions to the enterprise IT community have earned him recognition as both a Microsoft MVP and VMware vExpert. He can be found at gestaltit.com, fosquettes.net, and on Twitter at sfosquette. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello. Hey, Stephen. Welcome.
Glad to have you.
Actually, I guess that's your line, isn't it? Welcome.
Well, don't you do your own podcast as well?
Oh, I've done all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I do have an occasional podcast that I've done or two, and I've been a guest on quite a few of them as well. So I'm all confused. Mm-hmm.
So you're used to welcoming and being welcomed. It's all perfectly reasonable. And definitely spent a long time. I've read your blog posts around storage and the pack rat mentality, which I find amusing because in my household, we have exactly the same battle. There is a room for storage. When that room is full, throw something away because that's a big room.
Yeah, unfortunately, my room for storage is packed to the rafters with all sorts of exciting old computer junk.
Yeah, I had the great hardware purge a couple of years ago when we were getting ready to renovate, and it was literally a truckload of old hardware.
Yeah.
And yet the space is still full.
The stuff that you just can't bring yourself to give up.
I don't know how
you
that works.
You can't get away from it.
How many keyboards does one person actually need? That's what I'd like to know. And I think that the answer for me is, my desktop actually has three keyboards attached to it right now. So I guess the answer is three.
Does that help having more than one keyboard attached to your machine at once?
I've got two hands, but I really can't use two at once.
Well, you have to have one to bang your head on, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. So I use the big old IBM Model M for that because it'll withstand the impact.
The Rattler keyboard. I love those
so
keyboards.
So wait a minute, you actually have three keyboards physically attached to one machine? Is that what you just said?
Well, yeah, because so I've got an iMac here, and I've got the IBM Model M attached to it for my normal typing keyboard, okay. which I love. You know, the big clicky clacky keyboard. And then
clackety clack.
I've also
sure.
got the a hardwired Apple USB keyboard because it's got functions like volume control and stuff like that. And because right. sometimes my adapter, the AT to USB adapter gives me trouble. And then, but the thing okay. came with a Bluetooth keyboard that's sitting in my closet or my shelf right next to me. And it's still technically associated and attached. So every now and then I'll be rummaging through there and suddenly my machine starts freaking out as I start accidentally typing on the Bluetooth keyboard.
That's awesome.
Now, do you have that cool magic trackpad, whatever that thing is called, that little standalone? That thing's cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've got the magic trackpad and I've got a nice hardwired Microsoft wheel mouse optical. So, yeah, I got two mouses.
Very eclectic
too.
iMac setup.
Yeah, the idea that my keyboard was made in 1987 and it's attached to a brand new computer, that's kind of bizarre.
You know, when it comes to throwing away equipment, I know we're totally on a tangent now, but oh well. But when it comes to throwing away like old computer stuff, you know, like they say that, you know, you're supposed to have the 1 year rule for stuff in your garage or whatever, you know, or the attic, which of course nobody really follows. Well, some people do, but I kind of have the 3 year rule for computer stuff. If I haven't really done anything with it in 3 years, then it's got to go. That's kind of my rule.
That's the end.
That's it.
If you haven't used it in 3 years, you don't even remember it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, how much equipment do you have in your room that you haven't really touched or looked at or really used in 3 years?
Oh my goodness, lots.
Yeah. Lots for me.
I guess it depends on how much you need the space. Yeah.
Well, it is a storage show, so we are talking about storage one way or the other. But I was thinking more about data storage. Maybe I'm funny that way. I have not had any experience with Microsoft Storage Server at all. So, Stephen, you need to start at the beginning. Why is this product existing?
Well, it exists because there are a lot of storage systems. Well, I guess the big picture is that the enterprise storage industry is a lot bigger than a lot of people realize. And, there's a lot of huge companies like EMC and NetApp and HDS that specialize in selling enterprise storage and sell millions of dollars worth of high-end enterprise storage gear. But, for every massive enterprise storage array that somebody buys, there's also a lot of people out there that are just looking for a very, very simple kind of a storage appliance. And while, you know, certainly a NetApp or an EMC VNX or something like that is a storage appliance, a lot of people need a device that's just basically a server with some disks that can handle storage protocols like NFS or iSCSI.
I mean, isn't a RAID array enough for those folks?
Well, there are dumb RAID arrays. There are plenty of those that are basically, they go all the way down from, I've got a 2-disk, 2.5-inch drive RAID array sitting here on my desk, all the way up through, really, really massive, petabyte scale dumb RAID arrays. But sometimes people want something that's a little bit more flexible or integrated. And, a lot of people love to have a standard operating system on it so that they can run virus scanning or that they can run they can have it integrate with their domain or whatever. So that's one reason that a lot of, applications like, or operating environments like Nixenta, which is a version of OpenSolaris with NAS and iSCSI, are popular. And that's why Microsoft Windows Storage Server exists. It's basically a special version of Windows that runs as an iSCSI and an NFS target. CIFS target, yeah.
So is this kind of like Windows Home Server for the enterprise? Kind of like that?
Yeah, it's very like Windows Home Server for the enterprise. And just like Windows Home Server, no one knows it exists. And Microsoft may not even know that it exists.
And the people that do like it and do use it, then Microsoft screws it up and makes them really upset. They all go away.
Exactly. You clearly have talked to Windows Home Server experts in the past.
Well, I mean, I've been running Windows Home Server since before it was Windows Home Server, right? And I still have one here, but but there's a lot of upset people out there.
Oh yeah, I'm a Microsoft MVP, which means that I get to go on campus in Redmond and gripe at Microsoft all the time, and there's definitely a lot of griping going on around Windows Home Server because a lot of people really love that product, and yet, guess what? You know,
they only took one feature out. One little feature.
The one feature that really differentiated that everybody really loved.
Yeah.
The only one feature that really differentiated that everybody loved.
There's only one OEM left for Windows Home Server. I think that it's a pining for the fjords. It is an X carrot.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because there was an awful lot of really good potential there. There really was an opportunity.
There was.
It's really too bad. I know they had some problems with that disk storage system, but it was a cool storage system that it's just too bad.
I really like the HP MediaSmart home servers, but HP is done with it now, so I don't see any point continuing.
Yeah,
that's what I have sitting. That's what I have sitting here in my office, and it's a dead machine sitting.
So
dead machine.
Is storage server sold the same way? Is it a prepackaged machine, or do you install it on any hardware you want?
Well, Windows Storage Server is, again, that's kind of the enterprise equivalent of Home Server, and it has a bunch of great features in it. There's a SRM software so you can watch how your storage is being used. Again, it's got an iSCSI target, all sorts of other great stuff. Traditionally, Windows Storage Server has been sold only to OEMs and only then sold as a bundle to end users, and it kind of grew out of a similar version of XP that companies like LaCie and others used back in the early part of the decade. I was actually at the unveiling of Windows Storage Server, which was kind of funny. And at the time, I was pretty thrilled. But frankly, Windows Storage Server is being phased out. The inside line that I'm hearing, and I don't think that this is a violation of an NDA or anything, I think it's the writing is on the wall, is that Windows Storage Server as a standalone product is not really where Microsoft is going, and that Microsoft is going to have Windows Server be able to do all the things that Windows Storage Server could do, except it's just Windows Server. And
right.
So I think the next generation of machines are going to be running Windows Server, and they're going to have the iSCSI target installed on them, or they're going to have, FSRM or any of these other, Windows Storage Server type, additions running on a regular version of Windows Server. And that's probably for the best.
Becomes a piece of core functionality.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to define a few of these terms for folks that aren't savvy with all storage. I think most folks have heard of iSCSI now, but FSRM?
Yeah, so iSCSI, just so that folks know, iSCSI is basically SCSI over TCP/IP.
Right.
So you can have a storage array that communicates over Ethernet and TCP/IP. With a server. It's a great way to build a SAN on the cheap without having to learn Fibre Channel,
right,
which I don't recommend that people try to do. You've also got NAS protocols. SMB is the proper name for what is often called CIFS or CIFS, which is the Microsoft file sharing protocol. And then there's also NFS, which has just been revved wonderfully to NFS v4, a very, very positive upgrade, and has been fractured into parallel NFS, which is a very negative upgrade, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, and some of the other things that I mentioned there. FSRM is basically a file system resource monitor. It allows you to watch the files that are used on a file server. It's great for just a regular Windows file server as well, and it lets you see what's being added, what's being removed, how much space is being taken up. You can see which files are new. You can even do some cool things like if somebody uploads a file of a certain type, you can have it kick off a special action. You can have it, complain if somebody uploads an MP3 or something like that. So another great piece of Microsoft software that no one's ever heard of.
It's frustrating stuff because this is obviously very interesting technology and stuff that more folks are going to use. I don't want to put Fibre Channel aside right off the bat here, just because as a guy who's done lots of failover and performance tuning and so forth, I find that Fibre Channel still has exactly one use, and that is synchronous replication of a storage medium over decent distance, like to another data center a couple of kilometers away, where you need the two storage points to be in sync, because iSCSI doesn't do that.
Well, I think that, you know, a company like Equalogic might argue that it does, but I think that Fibre Channel has one wonderful use case, and that's the biggest, baddest storage environments around.
Right.
It's not going away anytime soon. Frankly, though, I think a lot of those environments are already using it and already know it.
Yeah.
And anybody who's not using it and doesn't know it probably doesn't have any business getting into it, because iSCSI is probably good enough for them.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that there are very few SLAs where iSCSI won't deliver it for a lot less money and a lot less headache.
Yeah.
But there is a very narrow corner, and I've spent time in that corner, where the Fibre Channel was the only way to get the particular level of failover that we needed.
Yeah, exactly. And Fibre Channel is Fibre Channel is continuing to advance and develop. There's the 8 gigabit Fibre Channel has just basically come into its own in the last year,
mm-hmm.
and is now absolutely best practice. 16 gigabit Fibre Channel products are coming rapidly, and then we've got Fibre Channel over Ethernet, which is a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, why aren't you just going iSCSI? Hello?
Well, FDOE has a good use case, and that's that I think a lot of, well, I certainly didn't appreciate it first. And that's the fact that 10 gigabit Ethernet is actually substantially faster than 8 gigabit Fibre Channel.
Mm-hmm.
In practice, it's about 50% faster than 8 gigabit Fibre Channel, which you wouldn't think,
no,
considering the 20% difference in the name. But, and also the other big deal is that, a lot more devices can connect with Ethernet a lot more flexibly than they connect with Fibre Channel. So at this point, Fibre Channel over Ethernet is really an edge storage protocol, meaning you've got a whole bunch of servers with Ethernet cards, 10 gig Ethernet cards. You can do really amazing things building a Fibre Channel SAN over that Ethernet network instead of investing in a bunch of Fibre Channel switches and HBAs and so on. So basically, mm-hmm. FCOE is an awesome edge case right now for companies that have, you know, that want to have massive SAN deployment. Mm-hmm. And, I've kind of come around to appreciating it, even though it does seem totally insane to put Fibre Channel packets over Ethernet.
Yeah, it does.
So a number of us, networking and storage guys got together, about a year ago now, actually a year ago this month in Seattle. And, you know, we were all kind of pulling our hair out over the insanity of modifying Ethernet to handle bus protocol like SCSI and Fibre Channel.
Right.
And a lot of us, you know, we had this sudden flash of realization that there was a much better LAN protocol that we should use instead of Ethernet.
Please don't really say token ring. Please don't say token ring. Please don't say token ring.
Token ring.
Fibre Channel over token ring is such a better idea.
Well, and now you're just showing off how old we all are, that we remember the advantage of token ring was this: you didn't do the collision avoidance behavior. It's everybody gets a turn. And for stuff like storage, where you're moving big chunks around like that, it's ideal.
Makes sense.
Heck yeah. And so a bunch of us got together and we decided that we were going to form this thing. And so basically for the last year, we've been, well, we've had modest proposals for the storage industry. I've been turned down repeatedly by SNIA to present on the topic of Fibre Channel over Token Ring at Storage Networking World. But we're keeping up the good fight. We've got a user group. We've got t-shirts and buttons that I'm handing out everywhere I go, because, you know, I really want people to consider the value of Token Ring in situations like this.
I would argue that the only reason Token Ring lost out to Ethernet is the crappy plugs that IBM came up with.
The BNC connector? No, crazy.
Remember
thing?
The hermaphroditic?
The vampire man.
That great big block plug, the big square thing.
Oh, that thing.
Compared to how tidy an RJ45 was. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, because you could pack more into a given U.
Yeah, I remember at the time. I remember having that thought. You know, what are they doing here?
Yeah, it's just no reason to make that plug so flippin' ugly. Make a little plug.
Yep.
They're IBM. They can make it big.
I mean,
why'd you make it big? Because we're IBM.
Yeah. You know, I think that you found the only audience in Greg and I that wouldn't argue with you over the idea of Fiber Channel over Token Ring. It makes perfect sense.
Well, I'm probably the only two people that you could have on the same phone conversation that would answer your question immediately with Token Ring.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm impressed by you guys now. I like you guys better all the time.
Wow, what does that say about
That's
us?
That's crazy.
But we've been seeding the idea. We actually have a bunch of engineers at Cisco, IBM, Brocade, HP, all sorts of places with these Fiber Channel over Token Ring buttons. And I'm hoping that what's going to happen is that it's going to sink into their little heads and they'll decide to abandon this foolish Ethernet effort and switch to a positive direction like Token Ring.
Nice.
Well, we shall see.
And, you know, SANs in general, the price has come down. I'm just wondering if all of these interim solutions are being squeezed out. I'm looking at a product like Drobo, which for just a few thousand dollars is a dual iSCSI target. Like, that's a stunning achievement. And rack mountable, mm-hmm. like, that's a product.
Absolutely. And the Drobo actually introduced that product at the Tech Field Day event that I run in front of a dozen bloggers, and literally every one of them was absolutely thrilled with that product. I got to say, we were Drobo has introduced their entire product line at different Tech Field Day events, and nice. Every time they talked, everybody in the audience would say, "You've got to do this in the business. You've got to do this in the business," and they have, and they introduced that with their business line in the fall. They've got a real uphill climb in terms of matching the features that everybody else in the enterprise storage industry has.
Sure.
But in terms of a really wonderfully flexible, inexpensive iSCSI target, it's hard to go wrong. And, you know, I really, really am happy that that's the direction that the Data Robotics went.
Steven, I'm with you. I don't want to necessarily focus on Drobo per se, but I'm thinking below the SAN. I mean, once you've got the money for a SAN, that's fine. It'll do all these things. But Drobo and some other folks seem to be sliding into the spot between or just above, like a more mature version of the external SCSI array, the thing we used to need for clustering, you know, in the old days, ParaSQL servers, external 320 ports that connected onto an array at either end. And that's how we actually share drive storage that way. I think the dual target iSCSI solution is much tidier.
I agree. And I think that the ideal use of iSCSI is in this kind of situation where you basically, you need shared storage, you need the ability to do clustering, and you need something that's not going to be a total hassle to implement. And iSCSI fits the bill for that.
And also not just, right. I mean, it's one thing to do cluster SQL servers. The other area that I see this phenomenal for, and I think one of the reasons it's exploded, is virtual machines, being able to have two separate host machines have access to the same storage block so that they can fail over virtual machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And server virtualization, you know, it's funny. When I talk to the storage vendors out there, the thing that I hear the most is that the only reason anyone is buying SAN at this point, whether it's iSCSI or Fiber Channel or NAS. I mean, basically, the only reason anybody's buying any kind of shared storage is to support server virtualization or desktop virtualization workload. I mean, that's why people are getting into it. There's no real, everybody else already has it.
Right.
And so that's kind of why I say that, you know, you look around, VMware is really where it's at when it comes to storage. And that seems really strange, but that seems to be where the state of the storage industry is focused.
Well, and plus virtual machines understand network connections better than they understand LUNs, and so iSCSI just functions better in the virtual space.
Well, yeah, I mean, iSCSI is still block storage. I think some people would argue that NFS is a better target for server virtualization. You know, I was recently talking to a company called Tintri that is building a special storage device just for server virtualization, and they chose NFS as their protocol instead of iSCSI because they felt like it went even further in terms of abandoning a lot of the difficulty that block storage generally presents. And, you know, I think they've got a point there.
Mm-hmm.
we go back to storage server. How is this managed, and what are some of the services? We've talked about connecting to it and sort of, you know, integrating with it. But, you know, if I'm the IT person that is going to implement this and wondering what it takes to actually manage these things, what do I need to be thinking about, and what kind of services does it provide?
You're talking about Windows Storage Server?
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, Windows Storage Server isn't really, it's not a lot to write home about when you compare it with other enterprise storage systems. I mean, if somebody wants ease of use, there's a lot better products out there than a Windows Storage Server device. The one thing that it's really got going for it is the fact that it's Windows. And if you know Windows and you know how to do, you know, snap-ins and management console and things like that, it's a no-brainer. And it really integrates right in with your domain, and because it is Windows. You know, I mean, nothing can pretend to be Windows as well as a real Windows system.
I think it's a fair comparison to compare Microsoft Storage Server, or whatever it ultimately morphs into, just Windows running as a storage device, to something like a Drobo rather than something like an EMC rig. You know,
sure.
Yeah, because it's so simple.
You're right. Operations manager is going to work with it. You know how to manage it. You want to run virus scanning directly on the box. That's easy to do. Like, there's just things you get because you're in Windows that you wouldn't get with a simpler device like a Drobo. On the other hand, you know, the upside to it, something like a Drobo, is incredible reliability, simplicity. Like, that simplicity is also a strength. So you've just got to pick which one's more important to you.
Right.
Yeah, and like a Drobo, Windows Storage Server is missing a lot of features that you would find in an enterprise storage array.
Right.
So again, you've got to pick that as well. You've got to decide whether, you know, robust replication is something that you really need, or, you know, even, you know, you were talking about clustering, you know, even, whether, you know, SCSI 3 persistent reservations are something you need. That's very difficult to implement, and it took, I believe the Drobo has that now, but it took them a while to develop that. So that, you know, originally they couldn't even handle clustering as a workload.
Right. Well, and there's this whole discussion when we deal in the SAN space in general, of front end versus back end replication. Do I replicate by being able to snapshot the blocks behind the app without the app even knowing, or do I make the app part of the process? You know, SQL Server has its own set of replication and database mirroring and so forth, but I can cheat and just keep a continuous image of its SAN space at the same time.
Yeah, and it hurts me to say it as a storage guy, but I think that, in my opinion, the best practice would be to keep advanced features as close to the application as possible, or as practical. You know, so I think that if all you've got is SQL Server to replicate, then it probably makes sense to use SQL Server as the replication engine. You know, similarly, you know, one of the things that I'm impressed by, there's a lot of software that'll do replication on the host side. And you think that that's kind of going backwards because storage arrays can just dump their entire content across the LAN, and that's great. But frankly, it's a lot more easy to integrate host-side replication or virtualization-based replication than it is to integrate storage array-based replication.
Right.
So,
well, it seems to me that storage array replication ends up being the lowest common denominator. At least we have replication, but given an option with something more advanced, especially in the case of SQL Server, where there's a lot of dagger integrity issues around that, you know, you want to use the product that's the way it's designed to be used.
I agree, and I would definitely recommend if somebody just has SQL Server to replicate, they should just use SQL Server. Or the same thing, you could say the same thing with Exchange. You know, you could say the same thing with a lot of different applications that have integrated replication.
But even if you are using replication for you know, your SAN level replication for other apps, wouldn't you still recommend let Exchange do what Exchange does for its own replication solutions? Let SQL Server do what it does for its own. You end up managing more than one product, but at least you're using the product the way it was designed to be used.
Well, I have to say, you know, I have to give you the consultant answer of it depends. I can see a reason that you might want to not use those and that you might want to consolidate your replication on a storage array, especially in a big complex environment, or if you've got a lot of storage expertise. But I can also see a lot of arguments be made that, you know, you should let Exchange do what Exchange does.
Yeah.
And you should let SQL do what SQL does. And I guess it depends on what you need. You know, it depends on what you got. And, you know, another thing to think about is the fact that array-based replication is generally very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another issue that comes up. And the same thing for software-based replication. You know, I mean, you look at, Symantec has Veritas Volume Replicator. They've got some great, great features in there. It's been going for over a decade, but it's somewhat expensive. You know, we recently had a company called Zerto talk to the Field Day crew. They have a great software-based replication approach for virtual machines. But again, it's going to add the cost to every single one of those machines. And you've got to ask, is that something that I want to invest in?
Does it actually make sense?
Yeah.
Well, I like where the storage fabric is going here, that we've always had the high-end SAN. It's filling in that middle part well, that I think is where people are struggling, that it's hard to pick the products and understand where these different things fit into the matrix. Nobody wants to admit they're above and below anybody else. So any other favorites in terms of that mid-band hardware for you, Stephen?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are some... I recently put together a buyer's guide to enterprise or small enterprise storage arrays, basically things that are inexpensive between like a couple thousand and $20,000, $30,000. And, you know, I got to say there are a lot of great products in there. EMC's new VNX is a great product. You know, NetApp has some great products. HP and Dell, don't count them out. They've got some good stuff. And then there's a lot of smaller companies too, and I was very, very impressed by the storage systems that use the Nixenta operating system. They get a lot of great features in terms of scale out, you know, a lot of flexibility from the ZFS file system that I'm sure that a lot of your audience just loves. And there are a lot of products out there that use Nixenta, and even if they don't, it's free. And so you can just go to Nixenta.org and download it and build your own, and you can make a heck of a storage array using that free software, let me tell you.
Cool.
Nice. Well, Stephen, we're just about out of time here. Any points we've missed, things that folks should be looking at in context of the storage options?
Well, absolutely. I think that one thing that we haven't talked too much about is cloud storage.
And, oh, of course.
You know, I spent a year at a cloud storage company, so I might be biased, but I've seen some great applications of cloud storage, and I'm really enthusiastic to see where both object storage systems and cloud storage systems are going. You know, I look at, you know, Apple's iCloud announcement. I think that's going to change the way that Mac OS applications store data and iOS applications store data in the cloud. You know, I personally use Amazon S3 as a content distribution network for media content from my blog. Yeah, there we go. So this is hosted on S3. And similarly, there's a bunch of object storage systems. You know, I was talking to the guys from Coringo recently. I've talked to folks who are doing some really amazing work on advancing the state of the art in storage. You know, you look at, you know, companies like Amplidata. You know, they're really doing some clever things, CleverSafe, moving where we think that storage is into the future. And I'm always enthusiastic about innovation. I'm usually less enthusiastic about actually using it in production, but I hope that these things will hit the mainstream fairly soon.
Well, and even as simple things as Dropbox and SpiderOak, just replicating directories of files into an offsite location rather than paying for a separate data center or even you know, large infrastructure of any kind. Like, there's so many ways to take advantage of cloud storage as a backup solution or a failover solution as well as a primary solution.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot of that's the thing. I think people think of storage as such a backward world, and it sure seems like a backward world if you just look at RAID arrays and barring stuff like that. But if you actually think about storage as including things like Dropbox and iCloud and, you know, all this other, you know, crazy stuff out there, suddenly it starts becoming a lot more interesting. And that's the only reason that I'm still able to stand it after, you know, almost two decades now of being in the storage industry.
Steven, it's been a lot of fun talking to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been a lot of fun talking to you, too. I love the sysadmin techie focus.
Yep, and Fiber Channel over Token Ring.
Fiber Channel over Token Ring. Hey, if anybody's at anything that I'm at, come see me, man. You get yourselves a token of my appreciation.
Nice. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll see you next week on Run As Radio.